You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Kick-Ass Politics is sponsored by Fiverr. You've heard me rave about Fiverr before. That's Fiverr with two R's. Fiverr is the world's largest online marketplace for services, with over 100 categories all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. Logo design, business consulting, marketing, business cards and stationery, web design, translation, proofreading, legal consulting, and just about any other service you can imagine, all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. You know the announcer who does our intro on Kick-Ass Politics? Believe it or not, I found him on Fiverr, a professional radio announcer to do our intro for just $5. And right now, if you go to Kick-Ass Politics and click on the Fiverr ad on our sponsor page, you'll be showing your support for the show, and you'll get some great offers on services tailored to your needs. Whatever you need done, find it on Fiverr. Hi there, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. This week, President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran is heading for a showdown in the Senate. And the man at the forefront of the fight to stop the Iran agreement is my guest today, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. As a leading hawk in the Senate for the past 12 years, he's been a consistent proponent for a strong U.S. presence in the world and aggressive intervention to halt our enemies abroad. A former colonel in the U.S. Air Force and a reservist in the Air National Guard until he retired just this year, Senator Graham has served on the Senate Committee on Homeland Security, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and the Veterans Affairs Committee. Today he serves on four committees, including the Armed Services Committee and the Senate Appropriations Committee, where he chairs the subcommittee on the Department of State. And folks, that's a lot of committees. But as if that wasn't enough, he's currently running for the Republican nomination for president, and as you might have seen from last month's debate, from ISIS to Iran, Senator Graham has made it his duty to call attention to the many threats that face America today. And in just a moment, we'll talk about Iran and the nuclear deal that he says could put Iranians closer to getting a nuke and send the Middle East spiraling into chaos. Plus, we'll talk about the presidential campaign and, of course, Trump. All that with Senator Lindsey Graham in just a moment.
From Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
This week, things are coming down to a showdown in the Senate over the Iran nuclear deal. And today I have the grand old hawk of the Senate himself, Senator Lindsey Graham, joining me from his campaign office in New Hampshire. Senator Graham, thanks for coming on the show.
Glad to be with you. Happy holiday.
Yeah, happy Labor Day. Well, Senator Graham, you've been the guy banging the drum against this Iran deal harder than anyone probably, whether it's in the Senate, on the campaign trail, in the last Republican debate. Do you think you're finally making progress toward waking people up to this threat?
Well, I can tell you this. We've woken the public up. They're 2-1 against it. I don't know where the Democratic Party lands here, but I think we'll get 60 votes for cloture. Whether or not, which means a final passage vote, whether or not we can override the president's veto, I don't know, but I do know this. This is the worst miscalculation since Munich. Obama has separated Iran's behavior from their nuclear program. That was a huge mistake. The $100 billion they will get in sanctions relief is going into their war machine. They can buy more weapons. They can build a missile. And they got a pathway to a bomb in 15 years, whether they cheat or not. This is a terribly bad deal.
Well, you know, unlike most of us, I imagine that you've gone over this deal with a fine-tooth comb. And I remember for the longest time, the White House refused to really reveal the details of the Iran deal to the American public. And, you know, it was kind of like the deal with Obamacare. They kept saying, just sit tight. It's a really good deal. Just bear with us. Do we think we finally have a clear picture of what this deal's going to be? Or do you think that there's still some more surprises to come?
Yeah, I think there are more surprises to come. Number one, there's three things we wanted to do. Dismantle their nuclear program. Well, we haven't dismantled it. We've locked it in place, industrial-sized enrichment program. With the passage of 15 years, they can enrich and reprocess without limitation. The second thing was to basically find out with certainty how far they've gone down the road of developing a nuclear weapon. This side deal between the International Atomic Energy Association and Iran about inspecting Iranian military facilities is a joke. It's a secret deal between Iran, the IAEA, that the Congress can't look at. We know that in Parchin, the military base in Parchin that the Iranians have, they were testing nuclear detonators. So this whole idea of voting on this deal until you can see the side deal where the Iranians apparently get to inspect themselves just as mind-boggling. I can't imagine anybody voting on a deal where they don't know the entire deal.
Well, I'll tell you, Senator, when I look at the Iran deal and the Cuba deal, among others, I'm confused by this president's strategy, or perhaps lack of strategy, I don't know. It seems to me that we gave away everything and got nothing. Is it as simple as this president's just a woefully inept negotiator, or is there something that he thinks he's getting out of this that I don't understand?
Well, I think, one, he's woefully inept negotiator. The guy's probably never bought a car. The biggest problem he's made is not looking at the Iranians' disruption of the Mideast support for terrorism as if that doesn't exist and just focusing on the nuclear program. What do we get out of this? All I can tell you is that the largest state sponsor of terrorism, Iran, comes out of this richer. The people who want to get rid of the Ayatollah are weaker inside of Iran. They've disrupted and taken over four Arab capitals during the negotiations. They keep chanting death to America, death to Israel. They get to inspect themselves. They can buy weapons, more weapons after 5 years, start building an ICBM missile after eight. I guess the argument you can make is we've slowed down their program. All I can say is 15 years from now, it will be a two-month breakout. To me, it is a huge miscalculation, and there's a better deal to be had. And I'd be glad to tell you what I think that deal would look like.
Oh, yeah, please. How would a President Lindsey Graham handle this situation?
The Iranians see Obama as weak. When he drew the red line against Assad, Assad crossed it, and nothing happened to Assad. He'll be in power, and Obama will be gone. The Iranians felt like Obama's all talk, and he would not use military force. If the Iranians never believe the American president would stop a nuclear breakout, they're going to negotiate and negotiate. And the Russians sided with the Iranians about the buying more weapons in 5 years, the arms embargo being lifted, because the Russians are going to sell it to the Iranians. We're pathetically weak in the eyes of the Iranians. What I would do is go to Congress, if I'm president, and say, listen, give me leverage. Pass legislation that says the following. You can't use American banks if you do business with Iran. And every company doing business with Iran would have to choose between our banking system, our $17 trillion economy, and the Iranian $450 billion economy. And over time, the phone would ring. And I would tell our allies, listen, I'm not going to honor this deal. I don't mind Iran having a peaceful nuclear power program, but they're not trying to build a power plant. They're trying to build a weapons program. You don't build a power plant at the bottom of a mountain. I wouldn't give Iran one penny or one bullet until they change their behavior. They'd have to renounce support for terrorism. They'd have to change before I would give them any more money. Now tell them the following. If you try to break out, I will stop you. And if you're strong and you're patient, you'll get a better deal, because Iran knows they can't win a war between us and the Iranians. And I don't want a war, but I would do whatever it took to stop them from getting a nuclear weapon. And disagreement sets them on a path to a nuclear weapon, a missile to deliver it, money to pay for it.
Well, yeah, and it seems to me that we really got off on the wrong foot and weren't negotiating from a position of strength when we were hearing rumors that the Iranian foreign minister was screaming and berating Secretary of State John Kerry in negotiations behind closed doors. Apparently, it got so bad that Kerry's Secret Service agents even rushed in the room because they thought he was being attacked. I mean, when I heard that, I thought to myself, if I had been in Kerry's shoes, I would have walked out of the room right there, just like Reagan walked out at the Reykjavik summit. That's just a non-starter to me. How do you even begin to have a productive conversation in that kind of environment? And what would you have done?
Well, strong people don't need to scream. Listen, the relationship between Iran and the United States is not even close. We have a military and an economy far stronger than they do. Obama wanted a deal far more than the Iranians wanted. You've got to realize the following. Barack Obama is the same man who withdrew from Iraq completely when his military said you need to leave some troops behind. He's the same guy 3 years ago that was advised to help the Free Syrian Army and impose a no-fly zone in Syria when Assad was on the ropes. He's the same guy that said, don't worry about ISIL, they're the JV team. He's the same guy that said, I killed bin Laden, Al-Qaeda's decimated. At what point in time do we all realize he doesn't know what he's doing? John Kerry has not been successful in turning the tide here. ISIL is stronger than ever. The Mideast is in complete chaos. And the Iranian deal infuses the most radical regime on the planet with more resources. The Ayatollah and his henchmen are compelled by their religion to purify Islam, to destroy Israel, and come after us. These are religious fanatics. They're not in transition. There are no moderates left running the government. They were shot down in 2009. So I hope the next president, and I hope it's me, will understand that if you don't set this deal aside and get a better deal, you're going to unleash all hell on the Mideast and it's coming here.
Well, I remember Winston Churchill once said, never hold discussions with the monkey when the organ grinder's in the room. You know, and here we are negotiating with the foreign minister. But who's really in charge over there? Is it President Rouhani? Is it the Supreme Leader? Is it the head of the Quds Force? How is this deal worth anything when we don't even know who we're working with?
Well, here's a tip. They call you Supreme Leader for a reason. Because you are. This is a religious theocracy. It's not a democracy. It's not a collaborative process. There's a group, the Council of Elders, who are in charge of picking the next Ayatollah. It's like 70 people. So to those who believe that Iran is in the process of becoming more moderate, look what Iran's done in the last 2 years to the Mideast in general. This idea of a moderate versus hardline schism is a complete misunderstanding of Iran. The guy in charge of the Council of Elders is to the right of this Ayatollah. So over the next 15 years, there will be change in Iran and it'll be all for the worse. To believe that somehow this regime is going to change if you give it more money and more weapons is really naive. You're locking into place this regime for a long time. You're undercutting the people inside of Iran who won't change. You're putting every Arab neighbor at risk. They have blood on their hands from killing Americans in Iraq. They're the largest state sponsor of terrorism. You might as well have written a check to Hamas, Hezbollah, and Assad. I just cannot tell you in the strongest words possible how bad this deal is for the region, for Israel, and for us.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk some more about the Iran deal, the presidential campaign, and I might even sneak in a couple questions about Donald Trump with Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. This portion of the podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks available to download for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, Kick-Ass Politics listeners can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com and go get your free audiobook. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us producing new and even more interesting programs in the future. That's GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Republican presidential candidate Senator Lindsey Graham. We were just talking about President Obama's nuclear deal with Iran that is going to a vote in the Senate this week. Senator Graham, let's talk about that. The White House says that they have the 34 votes that they need to secure a deal in Congress.
They probably do.
If that's the case, then what is your strategy to stop this when it opens for debate in the Senate this week?
Okay, to highlight how bad a deal this is, make the president veto it. I think if the president has to veto it and it's affirmed by a third of the Senate and a third of the House, that would allow the next president to change their agreement because it was not passed by majority. It will not be. Their agreement will not be passed by majority. It will be rejected by a bipartisan majority. I think the whole process weakens the deal in the eyes of the American people and gives some leverage to the next president. What I'm going to do is try to cut off funding to the International Atomic Energy Association until they give us this secret deal between them and Iran about military bases. We give them $88 million a year. I'm going to try to stop that funding until we get to see the side agreement. I'm going to try to impose sanctions down the road based on their behavior outside the nuclear deal. There are things we can do between now and 2016 to push back, and I intend to push back. And if I get to be the commander-in-chief, the purpose of my presidency would be to rein in radical Islam, including Iran. And the way you do that is you get a better deal for us, a better deal for Israel, a better deal for the region, a better deal for the world.
You've said that if you're elected president, you would rip up the Iran deal on day one, and many of the other candidates have echoed that sentiment. But, you know, as we all know, you're very close friends with Donald Trump.
And
he made an interesting point when he said that, you know, I make agreements all day long, and breaking a deal may not be quite as easy as you might think. Does he make a point there? Is it trickier than just ripping up the deal on day one?
It's not so much ripping up the deal as that you're just not going to honor the agreement. As president of the United States, you'll have a U.N. ambassador, right? We will oppose.
Right.
Lifting the arms embargo. We will not honor this deal on our end. I'm not going to sit back and just accept this as a fait accompli. Not so much ripping up the deal as creating leverage to change the deal. And the leverage comes from having the Congress working with the president to create sanctions against companies who do business with Iran, take American banking off the table, give yourself some leverage. I don't want a war with Iran, but I'm not going to honor this deal. So if you don't understand that the number one priority of the next president is to deal with radical Islam before it comes here again, to change this deal before it empowers the most radical regime on the planet with more capability, then you're not ready to be commander-in-chief. This is not building a building or a golf course. This is changing world order for the worse. I can't think of a more provocative situation in the world today than allow the Iranians a pathway to a bomb, a missile to deliver it, money to pay for it, because Arabs are going to have to make their own decisions. And I can tell you this, when they see Iran marching toward a nuclear weapon, they're going to march down that same road. If you don't stop this deal fairly soon, after 2017, you're going to unleash a nuclear arms race in the Mideast.
Well, in fairness to us, I don't think that they're going to honor the deal either. So
I don't think so. I think what will happen is that a strong president, China and Russia, are taking advantage of a weak president. When the Assad drawing the line against Assad, China believes they can do anything they want to do, build islands over resource-rich waters. We won't do anything about it. Russia went into Ukraine testing Obama. Now they're helping Assad more openly. Weakness makes the world a very dangerous place when the president of the United States is weak and doesn't understand we should lead from the front, not behind.
How much of your running for president right now, at this particular moment in time, is about using the bully pulpit to wake people up and draw attention to the threats we face abroad, including Iran?
It's a lot. I want to run for president to be president. I'm not doing it for my health. I've got a good job in the Senate. I want to be commander-in-chief. I think I'm the most qualified. 35 trips to Iraq and Afghanistan. I've learned a lot. I know what works and what doesn't. 33 years in the Air Force, 140 days on the ground as a reservist. Got the background and experience, I think, to be a good commander-in-chief. When it comes to radical Islam, we're going to win the war on terror. Reagan said the Cold War would end with us winning. I have the same approach to the war on terror. You've got to rebuild our military. We're gutting it. You have to use it wisely. I think I can bring us together. I've worked with Democrats and Republicans to do hard stuff like immigration. What did Reagan do that was so beneficial? He rebuilt the American military. I was a young captain. My pay went up by a third on his watch, and I appreciated the hell out of that. He led from the front. He set as a goal victory in the Cold War. He got Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill saved Social Security by working together. That's what the next president needs to do. Bring us together here at home. Reestablish our presence in the world abroad. I feel I'm capable of doing that. And one of the reasons I'm running is to articulate a way to win a war that we can't afford to lose and openly talk about working with Democrats when it makes sense.
Well, speaking of the campaign, you're close friends with Senator John McCain and also friends with former Senator Joe Lieberman. In fact, they used to call you guys the three amigos in the Senate. Both of them have a couple of presidential campaigns under their belt and eventually even made it onto the ticket. Did either of them give you any advice before you jumped into the fray?
Well, John said run because he thinks I'm the most prepared to straighten out a world that's falling apart. John McCain and Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman have been more right than wrong. That we argued, don't leave Iraq too soon. Don't pull out all our troops. You'll regret it. We were going to stand with the president to take on Assad 3 years ago. In Libya, we didn't follow up after Gaddafi fell. We have constantly pushed back against our policies with the Ukraine. We're willing to arm the Ukrainians so they can fight for their own freedom. So at the end of the day, they gave me the best advice of all, just be yourself. And I intend to. I don't have anything to fear. I am comfortable with me and my politics. I feel like I'm very prepared. I've walked in the shoes of those who are serving. They deserve a commander-in-chief worthy of their sacrifice. I intend to have their backs because God knows they've had ours.
And, Senator, you've been in politics for over 20 years now, but this is your first presidential run. Has anything surprised you about the campaign?
Yeah. how we can be this far along and talk gibberish. It seems to be, you know, the lack of a substantive debate. You know, I want to secure our border, but you're not going to deport 11 million people, including their legal children. You're not going to destroy ISIL by taking Iraq and Syrian oil and using it for our benefit. There has been no plan articulated on our side, much different than that of Obama. And so I'm just going to be patient. I'm going to every nook and cranny of New Hampshire. I'm going to be with John McCain, and I'm going to make the case that I'm best prepared to destroy ISIL, and what we're doing is not working, and we better destroy ISIL or they're coming here. So what's been surprising is so many people and so little real substantive talk about solutions to hard problems that make sense. But I think that's going to change.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you think that knowing who Qasem Soleimani is should be a requirement to be commander-in-chief?
I think this, if you don't know who he is and what he's up to, then you really don't understand the challenges you're facing as the next president. I have learned the hard way. I have spent time on the ground. I haven't been buying golf courses or building buildings or being governor. I have been a very involved national security leader by learning from what works and what doesn't. I know the region, but most importantly, they know me. And Soleimani has American blood on his hands. He is orchestrating the demise of the region, and somebody needs to stand up to him and the Ayatollah. Pick me. I'll do both.
Well, I know you have to get to a campaign event, so I'll let you go. But one final question. Have you given Donald Trump your new phone number yet?
The first kick of a mule is usually enough to educate a person. No, I haven't given Donald my number, and I wouldn't advise you do so either.
All right. Well, Senator Graham, I really hope that a few of your fellow senators have a come-to-Jesus moment on this Iran deal before it comes to a vote. And thank you again for coming on the show to talk about it.
God bless. Take care.
All right. Good luck with the campaign. Well, that's the show, folks. Thanks once again to Senator Lindsey Graham for coming on the podcast today. If you enjoyed this episode, then be sure to subscribe to Kick-Ass Politics on iTunes and leave us a review. And if you really like the show, then support Kick-Ass Politics by making a donation on the website or go to GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. Because starting this week, I'll be putting out 2 podcasts every week, but that also means double the expenses every week. So if you want to help us produce more episodes of Kick-Ass Politics, then please donate on the website or go to GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. You can keep up with the show on our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, gripes, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. In the next episode, I'll talk with the modern-day monuments men who are risking their lives to protect priceless artifacts and World Heritage sites from the destructive path of ISIS. So be sure to tune in then. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. This podcast may not be reproduced without express written permission. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.